Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're talking to Dr. Alan Miller, who is Executive Director of Medical Research for Thorne Research. It's a great company that I've relied on for literally decades for high-quality nutritional supplements that are accessible to health professionals and their patients. He's a graduate of Bastyr University, and we are talking about the concept of how you can literally help the brain maintain its suppleness, its ability to react to stress and recover from trauma, from degenerative diseases, and from the aging process itself. And whenever you talk about neuroplasticity in the brain, you get into sort of an alphabet soup. You start talking about BDNF and NRF. I call it NRF, you know, thinking of like a Nerf ball, you know, which helps me remember. Could you give us some definitions of those terms, please?
Now, BDNF is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, and BDNF is one of the elements within the brain that that helps to heal and helps to increase neuroplasticity. And NRF, it's a long name. NRF2 is really the way to think of it. It is transcription factor, nuclear factor, E2 related factor 2. That's why we say NRF.
Yes.
So it's NRF2. And NRF2 is really fascinating, and it stimulates mitochondrial biogenesis.
Okay.
And stimulates something called the antioxidant response element. So it increases the cell's ability to create its own antioxidants. So it's not just a typical antioxidant like vitamin C that sort of sacrifices itself to an oxidative stress or an oxidative species. It is actually making it so that the cell can create its own antioxidants. And in doing all of that, it stimulates that, what I was talking about before, where we can make more mitochondria. It's called mitochondrial biogenesis.
That's a great concept because, you know, it gives us the hope that we can actually turn back the clock, in effect, on our energetic pathways, that they're not simply doomed to progressively degenerate. I mean, to some extent, aging is inexorable, but there's a comeback trail for people to do the right thing.
I would have to agree with you there, and we may not ever get to that point where aging is stopped or reversed. I mean, when people talk about anti-aging medicine, and I always kind of cringe a little bit about that because we're not really doing that. We're hopefully helping people to age more healthily and age without the typical chronic diseases and conditions that we usually put together there with aging.
And there's another fascinating category of substances which seem to be related to aging and neurodegeneration and repair and insulin resistance, and those are the sirtuins, of which resveratrol is one of the cardinal examples, but there are other sirtuin supporters. So what's going on with those?
Well, let's back up to sirtuins, and I don't know how much your audience knows about sirtuins already. I would guess that you've probably discussed it quite a bit. But the original research on sirtuins and what got everybody's attention was the research that was done at Harvard, in which they started with, you know, flies, and they went to earthworms, and then they went to mice, and giving them resveratrol enhanced and increased sirtuin activity. And sirtuins can improve fat metabolism, it can decrease weight, decrease fatty liver, improve lifespan, at least in these small animals. So those are all the things that they found. And it was a breakthrough. But then we started hearing more and learning more about the other elements and the other cofactors that are involved in sirtuin function. And I think Sinclair, who was at Harvard, and his cohort,
David Sinclair,
David Sinclair, I think what he, and I can't speak for him, but I think what he ended up seeing is you can rev that engine only a certain amount with resveratrol. Mm-hmm. And if
in
you
fact,
don't
there
have...
there was a big investment by GlaxoSmithKline. Mm. They, I think to the tune of $600 or $700 million, they basically bought David Sinclair's laboratory and thought they were going to come up with a miracle panacea for, you know, virtually all diseases and aging. And they had to write it off because it didn't pan out.
Didn't quite pan out. Yeah, yeah. So he got a huge payday from that, but that research didn't really go forward the way that we thought it might. I'm always thinking, okay, they're going to do more research on resveratrol. Well, drug companies tend to want to do research on an analog of mm-hmm. resveratrol that then they can, of course, patent and hold on to.
Right.
Patentable. But what Sinclair and his group found was that there were other things that needed to plug into that system, that sirtuin system, and one of those is NAD. Mm. So what Sinclair is looking at now are some NAD analogs and some NAD metabolites that are similar to NR. So you can, like I said, you can rev that engine just a certain amount with resveratrol, but then if you plug in something like NR that's going to increase the amount of NAD, then you can really turbocharge it, and then your cells will function at a much higher level.
Alan, this is a good point at which to pause, because we generally allow our sponsors an opportunity to share a message with us, so hang on.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com.
Okay, folks, thanks for listening. And now let's get back to Dr. Alan Miller on the subject of neuroplasticity. And we mentioned all these various systems that seem to support brain function. Let's translate this to news that folks can use. What are some of the more plausible supplements that support BDNF, that support NRF2, that help? We mentioned the sirtuin pathway. We've got resveratrol. There's some other polyphenol substances that have a sirtuin enhancing effect. And then in conjunction with nicotinamide riboside or niacin.
The first one that comes to mind here is sulforaphane from broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables.
Which we thought was just a cancer protective nutrient. They'd had that reputation for a while. And that's fine. They had me at it protects cancer against cancer,
yeah.
But it turns out to have amazing properties vis-a-vis neurodegenerative disorders.
It may help with cancerous problems. It definitely improves the body's ability to detoxify substances. And then sulforaphane is one of those elements that increases the activity of NRF2. So if you're increasing the activity of NRF2, you're increasing the activity of something called PGC1-alpha, which is the switch that turns on mitochondrial biogenesis. So that's one of the areas there that sulforaphane can be very important with is making more mitochondria, making those mitochondria more healthy and able to reduce oxidative stress and able to create more cellular fuel, ATP. And if you're doing that within neurons, then you're making those neurons healthier. Another supplement that can do that is curcumin. Curcumin has that same kind of ability, a little different mechanism here, but in with all of the other stuff that curcumin does, the anti-inflammatory ability, the ability to act on cancer cells and a number of other things. So you can also then increase that mitochondrial function and neuroplasticity with curcumin. You mentioned resveratrol. Yes, resveratrol is important, but you need those other cofactors as well. Another substance that has been shown to improve in this area is green tea. So the epigallocatechin gallate, the EGCG that's in green tea, that polyphenol, can do a similar type of function. And then there are some other supplements and nutrients here, wasabi, cinnamon, garlic, lycopene. They can all increase the activity of NRF2, improve the antioxidant activity of the cell, create more cellular fuel, more energetics, and make your mitochondria more functional.
And I reviewed your lecture, and in your lecture you also give a nod to quercetin and alpha-lipoic acid as being part of that mitochondrial biogenesis support network.
Correct, yes. Both of those can be helpful. The quercetin is another polyphenol that works in a similar fashion that you see with green tea, and the alpha-lipoic acid being an antioxidant is very helpful, and alpha-lipoic acid is a cofactor within the mitochondria to create ATP.
Now, if you want to get smarter, you have many choices out there. There are a lot of supplements that purport to help you with memory, focus, and concentration. And among them are, of course, ginkgo biloba, and there's also bacopa, which used to be the main ingredient. I remember radio ads from a decade ago or so. Focus Factor was the name of the product, and
right.
it was bacopa. But can you help us distinguish between those two? Well, you know, let's say you're not suffering from Alzheimer's, you're not suffering from dementia, but you're just a busy middle-aged executive, or perhaps you're a student, and you want to help with focus and concentration. Are either of them plausible in terms of helping with brain function?
Well, let's look at ginkgo first. Ginkgo's tried and true. It's been around for, you know, thousands of years, and we've been using it as a supplement for 25, 30 years here. It used to be thought, and it was my understanding years ago, that what ginkgo did was ginkgo improved the blood flow in the brain.
Circulation.
And it does. So that is one of the things that it does. But we thought that that's kind of all it did. But it's got some antioxidant effects, anti-inflammatory effects, and in some, at least cellular studies and animal studies, it increases BDNF, which then increased neurogenesis, improved mitochondrial function. So it's improving the ability to make new brain cells, make new neurons, and make the mitochondria within those neurons more efficient.
And bacopa has a different mode of action?
Bacopa's got a different mode of action. Bacopa has always been one of my favorites as far as improving cellular function, improving memory and cognitive function. Bacopa has a few different activities. It does have some anti-inflammatory activity. It's a GABA receptor agonist, which means that it is stimulating your GABA receptors, which can make you more calm, less anxious.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, is a major destroyer of memory. Is, you know, I find that stress, the inability to relax, defocuses people. They're just unable to concentrate properly. So anything, so, you know, perhaps even theanine could help in that regard, because theanine is a mild relaxant, but it also seems to help with focus.
And theanine is a GABA receptor agonist as well. So we're talking about two substances that are kind of similar in their activity here. I've always found bacopa to have a pretty reliable effect on the brain, an effect on cognitive function, and a pretty quick response too. Within usually a half hour to 40 minutes, I can usually feel the effects of bacopa. Mm-hmm. And there are some nice studies on bacopa in pediatrics with ADHD and increasing, improving their focus and their memory. There are also studies on elderly, and it's interesting what we end up calling elderly, you know, and what we end up calling aged. Mm-hmm. It's a sliding, as I'm getting older.
Yeah,
here,
I got into the movies for cheaper the other night. You know, they didn't even card me, and I was a little insulted. I said, senior. And it's like the kid behind the counter, okay, was about 16, said, no problem.
Yeah, obviously, sir. But my sliding scale is somebody is old if they're at least 20 years older than what you are right now.
Right, exactly.
But this study that was in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine looked at who they called elderly, which was over age 65, and they gave them 300 milligrams of a standardized extract for 12 weeks, or they gave them a placebo, and what they found was improved memory recall and, as secondary effects, decreased depression and anxiety just by giving them a standardized extract of Bacopa. Another study in the journal Phytotherapy Research looked at two different doses. So this is a great way of looking at this. You know, you find out that one dose works and you go, okay, how about if we look at a lower dose and a higher dose? So in this case, this was a double-blind, placebo-controlled crossover study, and they did 320 milligrams or 640 milligrams of an extract of Bacopa, a small study, about 24 people involved, and what they found was the low dose worked really well. That 320-milligram dose worked very well at improving their cognitive functioning, and it happened fairly acutely early on.
Now, the concerns have been raised over ginkgo biloba's blood thinning effects, and it's thought to be a no-no to give ginkgo with any kind of blood thinning regimen, people on aspirin or people on heavy-duty blood thinners like Coumadin. Have you evaluated those reports, and do you have any opinion on it?
I have seen those case reports. I have not seen really good, strong data that scares me away from using it, which is why we still have it. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with it in moderate doses. See, part of the problem with any kind of a supplement or any kind of a botanical that improves memory or has some kind of an acute effect on the brain is that people say, it's natural, and it's doing this function in the brain, so a lot more of it must be just even better.
Yeah, a little is good, a lot is better. Yeah,
doesn't always work that way, no. And very high doses of any kind of botanical can potentially run you into some problems. So sticking to those the lower levels, the lower doses that have been studied, I think is quite important.
On another note, when we're talking about fish oil in terms of brain function, given that you have a choice now among fish oils, some are mostly EPA and a lot less DHA, others are more balanced EPA, DHA, and some are now DHA-rich, do you have an opinion as to which might be more supportive for brain function? Do you need both, or is DHA the active player in brain preservation and restoration?
Yeah, I don't think we ever want to throw the EPA baby out with the bathwater here. Mm-hmm. It is important, and the more research we see on this, it seems like the more important it is to have a higher level of DHA in the brain. So, but you can't say, well, we don't need EPA. Mm-hmm. We still do. Some people may not be making that conversion as well from EPA to DHA. And so it may be important, more important to give a higher level of DHA specifically for this type of neuroplasticity improvement.
And while we've been in the stratosphere in terms of select an esoteric nutritional supplementation, there's some practical advice for people who want to preserve brain function. And simple dietary adjustments and exercise can have a major impact on neuroinflammation and on BDNF synthesis. So what are some basic guidelines for people in terms of lifestyle?
Exercise is very important. There are enough studies now that show us that moderate exercise improves mitochondrial function and mitochondrial numbers. So that's just a given. Of course, like we said before, more is not always better. So you can run into a situation with really excessive exercise where you can have some problems then with mitochondrial function. Many times that's a function of your increasing oxidative stress, and you're not taking in those nutrients that you need, those nutrient cofactors that you need to make all of this work up to the level that you're stressing your body toward. But in general, very, very important to have exercise. Very important, do not smoke. Very, very important to decrease the amount of oxidative stress that we have in our lives. It may be important to reduce stress, like you were saying before. If you have increased levels of cortisol over time, mm-hmm. your memory tends to decline.
Yep.
So we, unfortunately, sometimes we don't remember parts of our lives as well as we would like to, but then we look back and go, that's when we had small kids. And those were potentially some very, very stressful times. So you tend to not hang on to those memories as vividly as you might hope.
And a nutrient-rich anti-inflammatory diet is good for the brain, along with maintaining optimal blood sugar, because we know the deleterious effects of insulin resistance within the brain, high blood sugar, and so on.
Absolutely, yeah. Having a diet that is a whole foods, very colorful and varied type of a diet is going to give you a lot of those phytochemicals from those foods that are going to be helpful.
Well, I'll conclude this podcast on the note that the Alzheimer's Foundation, a very, very conservative, hidebound group, long in quest of some magical panacea-like treatment for Alzheimer's, has recently awarded a $20 million grant for investigation of lifestyle factors in prevention of Alzheimer's. It's about time. And I think we covered some of the important potential interventions that could make a difference, because as baby boomers age, inevitably more and more will be prey to neurodegenerative disorders.
That's very, very true. Yeah. Sometimes that's what it takes, unfortunately, to really get good research going, is you get a large enough mass of people that are having a similar problem. And us baby boomers are getting up to advanced ages where a lot of these chronic conditions are afflicting us.
Indeed. So. Okay, so what's today's Intelligent Medicine take-home message vis-a-vis you, your research, and Thorne research? Because people may be saying, where can I access products like Niacel?
Either through your healthcare professional, you can go to thorne.com. And our take-homes here are: take care of your neurons, exercise, reduce oxidative stress, reduce oxidative damage, and try to have that really good, healthful, colorful, varied diet. And then if you need to supplement on top of that, nicotinamide riboside, resveratrol, curcumin, fish oil, and then some of these other things that we talked about.
Indeed. Well, thank you so much. You've been very generous with your time. I know you're busy. Dr. Alan Miller, Executive Director of Medical Research at Thorne Research, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.